Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Owen McDevitt, you a cold piece of work.
Hey there, everyone. Yes, this is Owen McDevitt.
And your bald head.
And I'm back with your free-to-air Second Captain's Monday shows alongside Ken and my loyal number two, Murph.
What does it look like? A turtle, is it?
You'll be hearing ads in today's podcast and in every Monday show from now on. And that's because we have joined the Acast Creator Network. But remember, if you become a Second Captain's member for just €5 a month, you'll get commercial-free shows daily, including ad-free Monday pods. So say the catchphrase, Murph.
Do you have the stones to join us today at secondcaptains.com?
And the stones.
Perfect. Now on with the show.
Welcome to heaven.
Which phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home. Those boys.
I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Monday's Second Captain's Podcast. Oh, it feels good to say those words again after a two-week holiday. Hey, Murph. Hey, Ken.
Hello,
hey,
how are
everyone.
You?
Welcome back.
Oh, I'm good. I'm refreshed. I must say, I successfully switched off while I was away, so I really haven't heard your voices. I have to reconnect. Yeah.
God, I always feel find it really weird that you've listened back to every single show when you're on holiday.
But now that you haven't done it, I feel annoyed that you haven't.
Yeah, and insulted.
Who do you think you are?
I feel annoyed and insulted. You're better than us.
I was following the Ireland game. We might talk about the Ireland games. There's a football podcast to come later on today. I do want to ask you, Murph, have you been presenting the shows Ask Ailge while I was away? That's what I'm getting from all the emails coming in singing your praises. Connor Kennedy sends this one from Belfast. Murph Akara, I wanted to lend my voice to the chorus of praise for your sign-offs over the last 2 weeks. Unfortunately, and despite the best efforts of my GCSE Irish teacher, I can follow none of what you've been saying, so you've inspired me to develop my vocab beyond that of a toddler with behavioural problems. Further inspiration, where it needed, came from watching, at your recommendation, the excellent on Colleen Kuhn. Truly, you are a cultural maven. Time for a spin-off, perhaps? Movie Club, Ask Ailge? There's a good PS here, by the way. Go on, yeah.
Yeah, I think that might be stretching my Ailge abilities a little too thinly.
There is a PS. A couple of weeks ago, we were at a wedding in the Britannia Royal Naval College, the very heart of Imperial Britain. Towards the end of the evening, we met an English gentleman, lawyer, cream linen suit. Upon hearing my partner's accent, his opening gambit was, I shit you not, do you listen to Second Captains? And when she answered in the affirmative, what was your favourite audio bed last year? Never in my life has anyone made a better first impression. Once again, that was at the Britannia Royal Naval College.
That is pretty good, to be fair.
Love it.
That is pretty good.
Absolutely. I dusted off the old school French on my holidays, guys. You'd be glad to hear.
École, l'école française, l'école.
I want to do that thing where you at least try a few words to get
I'm
on the good
side. I'm trying
to
remember the Del Boy phrase. Bonne la douche.
Bombouche.
Do you want to hear my proudest moment?
Please.
Well, I was campervanning around various parts of France and spent a couple of days on a farm in Brittany, a working farm where you stay. And it's obviously good for the young lad, you know, go around looking at the animals and all that sort of stuff. But it was a bit rough and ready, you know, as you'd imagine. It was a functioning farm after all. You know, they weren't just there to cater only to the needs of the people staying in the camps.
Cosseted elites that have decided to
descend for a bit of real French rural life. Mm. So the morning we were leaving, we were packed up, everything set to go. It was around 9:30. Went up to reception to find it closed and hadn't paid, so I wanted to check out. I called the mobile number that was pasted to the door, hoping to get through to Sandra, the woman who runs the place and speaks a bit of English. Instead, it was answered by an old woman who also works on the farm. I take to be Sandra's mother. Now, she didn't have any English, and my opening gambit was obviously bonjour, où est Sandra? There followed this conversation, all in French, in which I managed to convey my desire to leave the campsite. You know, je voudrais departer.
That's good.
It's always like je voudrais. Once you say je voudrais, you're halfway through a sentence. Je voudrais
acheter deux billets.
What was
pour
that one?
Paris. I would like to buy two tickets to Paris.
Yeah, well, I wasn't far off. It was like, je voudrais pay l'argent, you know. So
Jesus Christ.
I was getting there, Ken. Sandra's mother managed to make clear that Sandra would be milking cows for the next hour and a half. 11 a.m. She's like, basically 11 a.m. Check out that. And I'm like, no, 10 minutes. You know, I've got to get out here. Eventually, a compromise was it was more than a compromise. I won this particular cultural battle and Sandra arrived up within 10 minutes.
Oh.
Let me pay up and get out of there.
Well done, Alan.
And she was reasonably good-humoured about it. A bit more good-humoured than the barman of the local village who was awoken from his afternoon nap that he was taking right in his shop front.
Right.
Like, you're walking by the tobacco, you know.
He wanted to buy a pack of cigarettes?
No, the tobacco, they do a bit of everything over there, Ken. Sweets, beer, all that sort of stuff. It's a pub. Well, it's what we would
like
consider.
Like the one Arsene Wenger grew up in, but on the other side of the country.
Yeah, there you go. But that poor fellow was literally sleeping in his shop front. You know, you're walking by the street, which I presume is sort of maybe he's technically not supposed to close, but all the locals know you don't go in while the barman is sleeping. It's effectively on the street. But he was awoken by a thirsty Irishman asking for a pint of beer locale.
I don't think that was a cultural faux pas at all. You're within your rights.
In fairness, he served me the beer and went back to sleep, so there was no major issue. I just sat in a tobacco.
Yeah, to be honest, I think he's got the he's living his best life. I wouldn't be at all concerned about that lad. Odd.
He had a great day. I had a great day.
That lad's going to be doing just fine.
Yeah. But good to be back with you guys. Jamie Wall and former Clare All-Ireland winning captain Pat Donnellan will be on the show today. I leave for a couple of weeks. Murph, arrive back and the championship is almost over.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, three teams left.
No, hold on a second.
Four teams left. What am I talking about?
Left.
Oh my
That's
God, I forgot how sport works.
Yeah.
Semi-finals.
Well, now, of course, we go into the final group stage of the Ireland Championships, three-team group, to decide who is crowned All-Ireland hurling champion.
That isn't any more ridiculous than some of the suggestions for...
Well, I don't know about that.
Changes over the years. But, you know, it might just...
I don't think anyone's managed to get rid of the Ireland hurling or football final yet.
That's the way it's going, isn't it? That's the way it's going. You know, you boil a frog. You know, how do you boil a frog? Slowly. You know, we started off moving it 2 weeks earlier, then we're moving it into July. Before you know it, they'll have taken them away. Like, when are you going to wake up? When are you going to wake up to see?
This is all because Ked's going on holidays for the All-Ireland Hurling Final, which he wanted to go to this year. This is the only reason why Ked's upset about this.
A semi-final would have been all right.
Yeah. You know? But if the semi-final had been on a day earlier, then Ked would not have a problem with the split season.
Why the sudden fascination with attending an All-Ireland semi-final?
To be honest, though,
he wants to go to a almost entirely full Croke Park, and I told him to show my
wife, who doesn't understand these things. She hasn't been at one of these types of things, which is doubly tragic because she's from one of the leading counties, one of the leading current counties. I don't give too much away, but one of the leading current
hurling
counties. We're living through a golden time in that county's.
For this particular All-Ireland
achievements. Yeah. And I just felt it would be good to, you know, but then I find, oh, no, of course you can't do that. Because we've taken it away from where it's always meant to be in the year. And we're actually slowly, by degrees, getting rid of the whole thing. When are you people going to wake up? Like, what are you going to be telling me, Murph, the morning that they send out the email saying the All-Ireland hurling final and football final has been abolished? How are you going to be justifying it?
Yeah.
You're going to be telling me, well, of course, this has been on the cards for a long time, and you know, and it's a move that we've needed to make for a long time.
Hmm. Well, I mean, we're redressing the balance in favor of the club player, Ken.
Yeah, no, it seems the balance has been well redressed.
The humble artisan. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, oh, I mean, there's no point. I can't bring her to I could bring her to a club match. I mean, they're happening all over the place, but not that, you know, I mean, it's just, I think it lacks something of the grandeur of, you know, 80,000 in Croke Park.
Now, Ken, there is another solution. There is another solution.
Yeah.
Which is to say that you could take your summer holidays literally 2 days later than you currently are.
How was I to know?
Enabling you to go to this game.
How was I to know? The only information I had about when the All-Ireland final was going to be was that I'm an Irishman. You know? I'm an Irishman. And you know, did I for a moment think that in July that was going to be clashing with any All-Ireland hurling fans? No, you know, I mean, obviously not. Now you're telling me that I have to check like a slave the calendar to see when things are on, if I don't want to miss things. That's what you're...
Do slaves have calendars?
I've been spending a lot of time on the internet over the last couple of years, and I've developed a whole new way of looking at the world. And if you're telling me that I have to check a calendar before I book a holiday to make sure I don't miss something I want to go to, I consider that to be slavery now. This is the way things have gone since you've been away. This country, we used to live in a country.
Let's get into the hurling song.
Joe Kenny goes back to take the line ball. It's on the verge. It's on the verge for Galway. Joe Kenny with the line ball. Back outside his own 45-yard line. It's all over. Galway have won the All-Ireland Championship. Mick Kenny back in 1923. Joe Connolly in 1980. Connor is the man to my left in 87 and 88 with the captains. David Burke is going to captain Galway to the fifth All-Ireland crown. We think of Tony Keeney. We think of Joe McDonagh. We think of Niall Donohoe. We think of Michael Corcoran. We think of every great hurling person that has left us in the massive, massive time of 29 years. Connor is, I don't mind in admitting it, there's a fair few tears in the eyes. This is absolutely magic. Brilliant, Sean.
We are down now to the last four in the All-Ireland Hurling Championship. Not the last three, as I mistakenly said earlier in the show. Galway play Limerick now after edging it against Cork and Clare against Kilkenny in their semi-final after they eventually got it done against Wexford. Jamie, it's been a couple of weeks. How are you?
Owen, Falter Ash, good to hear your voice again.
Thank you so much. Pat Donnellan's on with us again today for the first time in a while. Pat, great to have you on again. How are you?
Good, lads, good. Thanks for having me.
Good. Now, the two games that, I got to say, at a similar stage in both matches, Jamie, I was a little bit concerned because both of them threatened to be absolute duds, to be fair. But in each case, enough happened in the second half. And actually, they ended up being sort of quite enthralling, I think, by the end. But there was a concern there that this could be an extremely underwhelming weekend's hurling.
Yeah, exciting, if not overly entertaining at times. At least they finished quite well. Without taking a victory lap, I think they took a similar pattern to that which myself and Murph were kind of half fearing last week. You know, we had a fear for Cork and it proved well founded. We had a fear for Clare as well that it might take a while to get going. But you know, we did ultimately at least fall on the side that they would get it over the line. I'm very
you
glad
did
we did.
You flirted outrageously with tipping Wexford.
Fluttered my eyelashes at Wexford and Derry Egan for quite a while before balking. All right, but ultimately, like, you know, we'll get into it, I'm sure. But like, Wexford didn't do enough when they had Clare kind of on the rack, and when Clare were probably just trying to shake off those cobwebs. They didn't get enough scores on the board. They didn't get enough shots either. Like, it's not like that they had chances and missed them. They really, you know, they didn't do enough when Clare were not at it. And then once Clare kind of got going, the gap wasn't big enough. Whereas I suppose if you flip that over and look at the other game, you know, Galway did their damage when Cork weren't going well. You know, they got their two goals on the board. They got their couple of scores. You know, they had their bit of a cushion that even when Cork rallied, it was too late.
So, Jamie, just if we take the Clare game first then, the way you're speaking there, like, obviously Clare getting a lot of praise for the way they came back and the way they did get the job done in the last 10-15 minutes. But are you pinning more of that on Wexford, pinning the result more on Wexford's inability to put Clare away when they had the chance?
Yeah, I think if Galway had been playing Clare and caught them in that form in the first half, they'd have beaten them. And I think if Cork were, I think just a team with a little bit more quality up front would have beaten them. I think if Rory O'Connor hadn't gone off in the first half, Like that was a huge moment. Like I'm saying all this now, like I think Clare are a better team than Wexford are, but I think everyone and their dog knew that it was just going to be really hard for Clare in the first 25-30 minutes of this game, coming off that massive high in terms of, you know, you're at such a pitch for a Munster final, you don't get it over the line, and then, you know, it's like 2 weeks later, it's like, all right, we have to go and play this game now against, you know, against Wexford, who have their bit of game under their belt to just get going. And it's just, you're on a hiding to nothing, like, in terms of if you're Clare there, like, so like for them, they deserve the praise for getting it over the line. You know, they got, like, I know the goal was a bit fortuitous, but they had Wexford on the rack anyway. You know, like, I think they were going to bring that game to extra time at least, even if they hadn't got that goal. And I think they'd have kicked on in extra time. You know, like, the most disappointing thing for Wexford, they didn't, again, it seemed like they didn't even get a wide at one point there for about a 10 or 12 minute spell when Clare just had them, when they outscored them the 1-9 to 2 points. But, like, again, like, they weren't even getting the ball up the pitch. It was like an underage game where, like, you're just pinned in and you just can't get out, and your goalie can't clear the 65 with a puck out, and I don't know what it just went wrong. It just, they just couldn't seem to raise a gallop at all. Like, whereas, you know, like, again, we will stay on Clare and Wexford, but just by comparison to Galway, when Cork got them on the rack, they just got that score every now and then, or they won that free every now and then, and it's just so important that it just keeps your nose that small bit in front. And Wexford just couldn't do that.
Take us inside the mind of a Clare supporter then, Pat, when Ian Galvin's shot comes back off the crossbar. 20 seconds later, it's in the Clare net, 160 yards down the other way. I mean, it seemed like that was that. You know, it just seemed like, right, this is one of those days where nothing is going to go right for us, and this is the end of the road.
Yeah, it was really, really frustrating game. It was, I agree with Jamie, there was kind of a sense of inevitability if Clare could get a little bit of momentum and you could just keep ticking away at the scoreboard. But it was so frustrating watching. You could see the guys were leggy. You could see that they were underperforming across the field. Like, Wexford had sat Dermot O'Keefe back on the right-hand side of defence. So it was as plain as day. So what they were trying to do was cover the right-hand side so that all the puckouts had to go on the left-hand side, and Paddy Foley would cover that off with Davy Fitz or if Peter Duggan came out. So tactically, they kind of hedged their bets and said, right, we'll leave a bit of space, D O'Key will fill it, and the left-hand side will be clogged. And if they go to the heavy side, well, then we've a man on, and if we don't, we have a free man. So you could see it, but it was like Clare didn't... It took Clare until half-time to figure that out, and that was the problem. Very minute then, the start of the second half, Dermot Ryan pushed up, Paul Flanagan pushed up, and you could see then that Wexford were kind of at a loss as to what to do, and that goes back to Jamie's point about not being able to get out of defence. When they pushed up on top of him then, Lee Chin and Conor McDonald were so far away from the puckouts that the real quality in Wexford, the ball just wasn't getting into them as quick as it needed to be. And I know Clare conceded a couple of goals, but I didn't get the sense that there was a real goal threat consistently from Wexford throughout the game. And that, you know, if you have a team on the rack early in the game where Clare were leggy, Wexford needed to be putting 15, 16, 17 points up on the board and really, really putting the gun to Clare's head. Whereas, you know, what, they had 10 points scored at half time, I think it just wasn't going to do. And then once Clare got a foothold, they were going to have a purple patch. So it was frustrating from a Clare point of view, but you kind of felt like Wexford were leaving the door open the whole time. And then when it came to the patch or the time when Clare were going to get their kind of period of dominancy, they just had the quality where maybe Wexford didn't at that time. No, but again, Roy O'Connor going off, I think, was a huge fill up for Clare. He gave the first pass into his brother Jack for the goal. So he's that kind of man who could have come back the field a bit and fed the ball in better to two inside forwards. And when he went off, then they were kind of missing that a little bit. So there was a couple of things that happened like that. But look, I think from a Clare point of view, it was frustrating. But in years gone by and in games gone by, if Clare were underperforming, they would have lost the game. And it's a real, you know, it's kind of easy to say it afterwards, I get it. But at the same time, from their point of view, you can't underestimate winning the game, playing sluggish and having it put up to you and coming out the other side. It'll give them, you know, a great momentum this week in training. Lads that were a little bit off form, Tony at the start of the game, Peter Duggan, even Sods at the start of the game. It'll give them just a little bit of breathing space now to rest up for another couple of days and then have 10 days of a run into the All-Ireland semi-final. So really frustrating at the start. But from a Clare point of view, I suppose they came through well, and the main guys again came through and a great impact off from the bench, which, looking at the overall picture again, is where you need to be when you're playing the likes of Kilkenny and Limerick then all going well later on.
Brian Lowen spoke afterwards, Pat, as well, about big players who just keep going until something clicks for them, you know? And it was most obviously what happened with Tony Kelly when you look at, you know, he like hitting three wides in 2 minutes is... Yeah. That's the sort of otherworldly performance we've come to expect from Tony Kelly. I mean, he even hits wides at an outrageous rate. But it also happened for Ryan Taylor, you know? And Ryan Taylor, I'd like you to talk to us a little bit about his, kind of his impact over the year, because he's kind of gone a little bit under the radar when obviously everything is on Shane O'Donnell and Peter Duggan and Tony Kelly. But he's been such an important player for Clare. And in the last 10 minutes, having like not heard his name, all of a sudden he was everywhere.
Yeah, he's a player who would have been around the club scene for a good few years, but and would have been known to have tremendous pace. Like he's frightening how fast he is. Like Tony is fast, but on a straight line, Ryan will just keep going away and away and away and away from you. So what he's added this year, I suppose, is his tackling is excellent. His general player on the middle of the field is excellent. And when things are tight, kind of like Jack O'Connor was last year, maybe for Cork. Like when you need someone just to come out with a ball and put the foot to the floor, Ryan can do that, and his fitness levels are just unbelievable. So the last day, I think, probably like most of the Clare lads, to be fair, they kind of struggled and they were just a little bit off the pitch of the game. But his speed and his agility and his pace around the middle, that if there's any loose ball there when other lads are getting tired, he just is straight onto it, you know. And he, it was a couple of times he broke through the middle, gave a little flick pass off or gave a little hand pass off. And he's really, really important to Clare at this stage. Like you mentioned Tony, you mentioned Shane O'Donnell, you mentioned Peter. Like he's probably up there, himself and Davy Fitz are the other two foreign players for the year, you know. And, you know, go back to kind of a general point, I suppose. Most teams are set up really well in the backs, and the backs are solid. You know, Clare, Limerick, Galway at this stage, Kilkenny. But it's the two or three, I won't say fringe forwards, but the two or three kind of non-kind of key players for teams. They're the ones that are kind of winning games at the moment. You can see it with the likes of Limerick, with Barry Nash in the backs, or David Reedy when he comes on. So when the main lads are tied up and when they're having a little bit of an off day, the other guys are stepping up. And luckily for Clare, we have it this year. Ryan, Fitzy and Kyle Malone obviously are playing really well. So he's instrumental so far this year. And, you know, when you're playing the better teams, they'll have three or four or five guys that can watch the main players, but they mightn't have six, seven or eight. And that's where when Ryan Taylor and Davy Fitz are playing well then, that it takes the pressure off Tony and Shane O'Donnell if they're a little bit off form or if they're being marked really well.
And just on that, on Ryan Taylor, like I would say that, like, and it goes back to the first thing you said, Pat, like that I would give Wexford an awful lot of credit for actually identifying Ryan Taylor as someone that, you know, we need to shut down here, actually. You know, like, no, it's not just about that. And like, Clare seemed to just play without a 12. Again, going back to the first thing you're saying, and so Wexford, it's not that Wexford played with a sweeper, I heard them saying, you know, in the commentary. Wexford just played with their six backs. And their seventh was Conor Devitt, who basically just dogged Ryan Taylor out. He was back in the 45 with Ryan Taylor at one point, and that's why, like, they just seemed to make sure that they had their structure there. And like, whereas in games gone by, Ryan Taylor was just kind of falling in between the cracks, where he was either getting followed and Clare were pummeling ball down that open side, or else he wasn't getting followed and they were picking him out all day. And when that kind of Clare, Wexford just seemed to figure that out, and it just did seem to actually, it had a bigger impact on Clare, I think, than armchair pundits might have thought, you know, like that. You might say, oh, shut down Tony Kelly and you'll win the game, but actually shutting down that actual outlet like Ryan Taylor and still having and not at the expense of losing your structure was part of what gave Wexford that platform in the start, you know?
Yeah, definitely. You could see it. Like, look, everyone keeps talking about matchups and it's cliche and all that, but you know, when you're playing certain teams, you have to get your matchups right. That's it. But Wexford hedged their bets. It wasn't a sweeper. I don't think you could call it a sweeper. You know, and most teams aren't playing with an out-and-out sweeper, if any. Like you can't afford to have a man loose because the other teams are so good with the ball. It's just, it doesn't really work. So he was filling a position where there's usually space, and that happened. You know, most Limerick, Clare, Galway, Kilkenny, they're all doing the same tactic. You're trying to free up that space and force the wing back to track a man or leave a gap, and somebody else will float into it. Whereas Wexford filled the space and said, look, go down the left-hand side, and if it does, we'll fight our way there, and we have an overlap. So I think the only thing from Wexford's point of view was that seemed to be their tactic, and when Clare matched it, Wexford didn't have the answer. That's the problem, and it's the risk you take with any kind of game at that level. If you put all your eggs in one basket and say, well, this is the way we're going to play no matter what, if you don't have the ability to change in real time, if it's not working, or if the other team has got the upper hand, then it's a game, you know, it's kind of a, well, who's the better team and who is the better players at that stage? And Clare have the better players, you know. And it's kind of like when you, I suppose, when you're going up against a team, when you know the talent they have, if you're trying to force, I suppose, you know, a tactic that's going to ask something of a team, but if they answer the question, you need to revert again straight away and change it up again, you know, because the class of Tony Kelly and Shane O'Donnell and Peter Duggan and all these guys was going to tell, and Westford weren't out of sight. If it was a tight game, you know, the classy players are going to come to the fore.
Yeah, Shane O'Donnell, we've only touched on so far, Jamie, but, you know, for somebody who feared for his future playing hurling only last year with this very serious concussion issue, he was just, he looked amazing, I thought. Well, particularly in the second half, he just, because, you know, you've both done a great job of explaining the tactics of the game. And even within that, you need game breakers like he is, just in terms of his ability to, he's just such a dynamic player to watch when he's in full flight like that.
Has added so much to his game since, like, his breakthrough, we'll say. Like I remember seeing, it was yourself, Pat, that made the run for one of his goals, wasn't it?
I did. I don't get enough credit for all the applause he got.
You're going to get it here, Pat.
Yeah. Well, he's a good-looking guy, so I get it.
But, like, I remember seeing that, like, his breakthrough game with Cork, against Cork, where he scored that 3-3 in the All-Ireland final. And, like, you know, people were saying, you know, oh, some of the goals were laid on a plate for him. Like, no, I dispute with that about one or two of them, but definitely Pat laid one on a plate for him. Like, and like, you know, but now he's winning puck outs. Yeah. He's winning ball in the air. He's winning frees. He's brilliant to win a free. He does this thing, like, where he takes the kind of the ball through you and then puts his hands up into the air, and it's like the ref is like playing Simon Says, like, oh, I better put my hand up into the air and give an advantage here. Like, he wins frees, he gets vital scores. Like, he's just turned into a very different player to the kind of the poacher he was, like, but so effective. Like, so effective in what he does now. He's after, like, I read one or two of his articles that were out when he got the Player of the Month, and he was discussing, you know, the concussion issues. And one thing that he did also say is that bit of time off the field allowed him to put on a bit of physical condition, and, like, it really suits him and it really suits his game. And what's more than that is it really suits Clare. Do you know? It really suits Clare, what the job he's doing for them now, and the way kind of the modern game has gone as well. You know, like, he's just added so much to his game and to Clare with this kind of new role that he seems to play for them.
Mm. What about that, Pat?
He's kind of a scary guy to kind of mark at times, because he, you know, if you tie him up physically, he'll just slip you, because he's just the way he moves his body and the way he can kind of flow, you know, or he'll kind of catch the ball behind your head, or he'll just flick the ball. He kind of is nearly a step ahead of you at times when you're marking him. So he's one of those kind of scary guys. He's like kind of TJ Reid, or you know, you kind of know what he's doing, but you still can't match him, you know, and he'll just get there that half second in front of you. So he takes watching all the time, but he's, I suppose, bringing him out the field, I think, has given him a bit of a lease of life. He's a brilliant inside forward. His finishing is second to none. Like, if you had a ball in the last minute of the game, I'd want Sods to have it. But he's more important to this Clare team out the field, because, you know, we see it now. Even we're talking about Wexford there the last day. You know, Wexford half forward line probably didn't offer enough to the team when they needed it. And having Lee Chin and Conor McDonald in the full forward line is, I won't say it's irrelevant, but, you know, the level of quality in there is only going to be as good as the ball going in, or as good as the focus that can be taken off the half back line to watch what the men outside. And if the half forward line aren't doing it, you know, the half backs will sit a little bit deeper, and the midfield will sit a little bit deeper, you know. So, you know, Tom Morrissey, Grod Hegarty do it for Limerick. You've Adrian Mullen doing it for Kilkenny. So you need those quality players out the field, bringing the half-backs out, making sure they're marking their men, and not giving all the focus to the inside line, because you'll tie up good forwards in the full back line if you have an extra two or three defenders to do it. So he's important that way, because he takes an awful lot of watching. But he's more than Ryan Taylor. He's excellent to come back and win the ball in the half-back line, or a kind of a soft hand pass, and he'll go past the man, like Jamie said, draw a foul. And then more often than not, I don't know if I ever really seen him waste a ball. Like, he very rarely gets dispossessed, and he'll always give a decent ball into the next guy. So, very intelligent man off the field, you know, knows what he kind of wants to do, doesn't get consumed by hurling, but fierce driven. Very hard to put him off, you know, physically or mentally or anything. He's just one of them guys. He just kind of does his own thing, plays well, and this year he's kind of instrumental to most of the things that Clare are doing.
Yeah, he told us a great story about his early days in college in Harvard. Murph, do you remember where he didn't the lads, his friends, his roommates, I think, over there didn't know what he did at home. It kind of slow, there was a bit of a drip feed, and eventually he showed
like it was
them the
March
YouTube
the
clip
following
or whatever.
Year before. It's like, okay, so here's 82,500 people going completely insane at me scoring a hat trick in 10 minutes. But, you know, again, I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What about Galway, Murph? They didn't exactly storm over the line, but they got over the line. Relieved?
No. I mean, oh, well, very relieved. But again, it's not kind of one of those, you know, the answers to the problems that Galway have had over the last kind of 3 or 4 weeks are presenting themselves in droves. I mean, they found a way, but it was, you know, if I'm from Cork, as one of the people on this call is, I would say I'd be pretty annoyed at just, you know, I think 3-11 was a figure that was being thrown around on the television analysis that they missed in the first half. I mean, you're going to miss a few, but three, like, it probably was in the region of 3-10, 3-11 that Cork could easily have put away in the first half. And it's so weird looking at Galway now, where we've been so long saying, you know, if Joe can't do it, no one can do it. And now it's seamless. Like, Canning retires, and straight away it's like, if Conor Whelan can't do it, no one's going to be able to do it. And it's ridiculous how Galway are so dependent on him. It's not just the scores that he gets. It's literally the entire shape of the team is dependent on Conor Whelan doing his job. So I'm relieved. I don't know how disappointed Jamie is at that Cork performance, because, you know, they're just such an enigma, Jamie. Like, it's really hard to get a read on this Cork team. And the more years of evidence we see, the more games we see even this year, the further away I think we are from knowing what kind of team this Cork team is.
Yeah, it's like supporting Man United. It's like you'd be more disappointed if you didn't expect something similar to happen at Saturday at 3 o'clock and, you know, spoil your weekend every so often. You know, at this point you're kind of resigned to these performances happening every so often. I think it nearly all ties together, like looking at, like, I know that figure 3-11 was bandied about. I think that's a bit exactly. Like, and like the Robbie O'Flynn goal chance, it's generous to call that a goal chance, really. You'd expect any top level goalkeeper to save that. You'd expect any intermediate club level goalkeeper to save it, to be quite honest. Like, it's a ridiculous shot. But I think that's actually emblematic of the problem with Cork, is that he went for a goal from there. Like, when Cork just badly needed the ball to go over the bar, they just badly needed a few white flags to settle themselves. Do you know, like, you're under a little bit of pressure. The kind of spectre of Patrick Horgan not playing is there anyway. Your free taker has missed one or two frees. It's like, just get us a couple of scores here, do you know? So, like, that's a decision. That's a bad decision. Even the 11 wides that they're talking about, like, I would always say, like, you have to look at the quality of shots as well. Like, some of them were not good shots, do you know? They were shots on your back foot heading over the sideline. They were kind of...
The Tim O'Mahony one in particular is just a terrible decision. Like, a terrible decision.
Yeah. You're just like, you don't take that shot. Like, and you can't really bemoan that as, oh God, we had the chances. It's like, that wasn't a chance. Like, that ball has to go out to Seamus Harndy and then it goes over the bar. Like they're small things. They're just indicative of the decision-making kind of malaise that Cork had up front.
This is actually an interesting thing, right? Because in the public consciousness, a wide isn't an error in a way that, like, you know, a defensive blunder is. But some of those wides that Cork met, it's not like, oh, well, we're creating the chances, therefore, you know, something good's going to happen. Like, they are errors, like bad, bad errors.
It's the shot is an error. Like, even the point Robbie O'Flynn actually scored, that's
an
error.
It's an error.
Like they actually... In the halftime analysis, they had the tagline Cork's missed chances, and then right at the end they had that score by Robbie O'Flynn. So obviously someone working in the truck had kind of saw him take the shot and goes, oh, that's going in the wide analysis thing. But it was even Alan Connolly's goal chance, he snatched at it, and it's so unlike him. Just kind of Pat said, like, that Shane O'Donnell is probably the best finisher, he would say. I would put Owen Cody and Kilkenny up in that bracket as well, in terms of, like, he'd always carry it in that extra... It's only a yard or two, but it just makes a savable shot into a goal, you know, and he hits the one off the hurley compared to Shane Kingston's finish in the second half, which is exactly that. It's like, right, I'm taking this another 2 yards and I'm finishing it off the hurley. Like, that's a real finish, like, you know, whereas Cork just snatched. They snatched at point shots. They snatched at goal chances. And, like, if it doesn't have to be... even in the second half, Tim O'Mahony wins the ball, right? Cork are after bringing it back to 4 points at the start, or four or five points to start the second half. And it's the first play, and Tim O'Mahony, he's bursting in. He's like, I'm going to go for goal again and play a ball across. It's like, a score is massive here. Like, a score is huge. Like, you know the saying, like, how do you eat an elephant? It's like, one bite at a time. Do you know? Like, a score there is massive for Cork. Like, and it's just the decision-making almost all day was just horrendous. Like, and then, you know, it actually goes back to, and I was going to, I had to bite my tongue not to kind of be like, talk about Cork and Galway when Pat was talking about Wexford a minute ago. But like, it goes back to, you know, like that, the structure side of it. And like, the, if you don't have, if you have a plan and if it doesn't work, or if it's, if it gets copped, how do you fix it? If you watch David Burke, he was like, you know, like a runner in the army out to the general, to Shefflin, giving him kind of the real-time information of what was happening on the field, and they were making decisions. That happened two or three times during the game, and you could see Galway adjusted. Like, so Cork got that first goal chance where there was acres of space in front of Cork's inside two. For the next 15, 20 minutes, Cork, Galway's half-back line did not allow that. Whereas if you compare it to the first, no, sorry, not the first Galway goal, I'm just trying to wipe the first Galway goal out of my mind, but the second Galway goal, the first real goal, we'll say, the actual goal chance, where Galway moved the point of attack across, Tom Monaghan just put it into the space. If you actually see the space in a one-on-one with Whelan is disgraceful, like. And even though Sean O'Donoghue's in front, like, a one-on-one for anyone with Whelan, like, he's such a bear, like, a one-on-one there is just, it's really bad. And then, like, I think it's Robert Downey's coming back. He's sauntering back into the space rather than recognising, Jesus, there's a chance actually that my defender gets out-muscled here by Whelan. And like, Cork didn't close down that space, and it just took that bit longer for Cork to do it. And as a result, Galway got that second goal that, like, ultimately was the difference. Like, whereas in the second half, if you watched Cork, very rarely were the inside two not accompanied by Joyce dropping in to make sure that they weren't exposed like that again. But it's just a case of, it just took Cork a little longer than it took Galway. And that's all it takes, is that, like, you know, like, sometimes with these tactics, like, you know, they're going to have us figured out after half an hour and we're going to have to revert to something. But you're just hoping you do the damage in that spell. And it just, Galway had, you know, it took Cork that little bit longer than it took Galway. Cork missed that chance with it. Galway got that chance with it. Galway took that chance. And at the end of it, like, there was a point in it. A goal is three. Simple enough, isn't it?
Pat, I saw from Galway's side of things, everybody, and I'm sure Shefflin accepts it, if they play at the same level, they're not going to trouble Limerick. But the question is the ceiling much higher than what we saw out there? Do you think that they do, with a few adjustments, specifically, what do they have to do to be competitive against Limerick? I forget about being competitive. What do they have to do to beat Limerick and take them down?
Yeah, I think to be fair, you know, I'm kind of bigging up Clare and they won the game, but I think the performance of the two quarterfinals now would be nothing related to what you'd need to do against Limerick. It'd be you know, Limerick could be out of sight in 15 minutes or 20 minutes there. You know, they just wouldn't. So in terms, but from Galway's point of view, I think, you know, scrappy enough game. Both teams struggling for a bit of form. Galway probably came good when they needed to, and a little bit more settled on the ball, like Jamie is saying. But to how to beat Limerick, I think, look, I think the way that most teams play against Limerick is that you can't go man for man, right? If you go man for man against Limerick, you leave the space in the inside line, and then you're basically you're a goose anyway, because their quality in the inside line is too much. So you have to have a structure. It's not a sweeper. I don't even think a sweeper will do, because if you give an extra man to Limerick around the middle of the field, you're giving him the advantage straight away as well. So it's having the confidence of the six players in the backs and the two midfielders going man to man, but always having that covering half forward or the centre forward sitting a bit to cover a man that slips off the shoulder for somebody else. So it's a very simple game plan, I think, to beat Limerick. But the problem is their players are so good. So one-on-one, every player takes so much watching. But I don't think there's a tactic like what Wexford did, or putting two men back and hoping that you can keep the scores down and you might outscore them eventually. I don't think that'll work, because they can shoot from distance, they can put it in high, they can put it in low. So they're an excellent team to watch from that point of view, and they're obviously the best team out there. But Galway are probably able to match them in the physical stakes, certainly in the backs. And they have the class in the forwards on their day. But Galway's problem will it always be there from the five or the four forwards, which is what they'll need to beat Limerick, because Conor Whelan will be tied up you know, even if Conor Whelan has a great day, you know, he's going to score, what, 1-7, 1-8, if he has a fantastic day. So you need the other forwards and the two midfielders at this stage probably scoring, what, 18 points between them, you know. So it's a huge amount of scores that need to come from the other players. And that'll be Galway's focus, that, you know, I would be thinking it's a man-to-man game, but on a really, really basic level, you just need everybody playing well. And if you have two or three or four lads falling off it, well, Limerick will just eat you away. And it's simple, but it's not easy. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's it, Jamie. And you look at that Galway forward line, Conor Cooney not really going all that well. Brian Kilcannon dropped altogether the last day. Cathal Mannion, in fairness, in the last 10 minutes came into it on Saturday. But up until then, you put that with the Leinster final that Cathal Mannion had, you have to say he's scratching around for his form. Like, there's still so many issues in this Galway team. And primarily, I think, in the area that all those guys play in, it's like Galway are getting absolutely destroyed in the air. And whatever about getting destroyed in the air by Kilkenny, getting destroyed in the air by Cork, with Limerick coming up next, is a really, really bad sign.
You'll get eaten alive by Limerick if you do that, like if you play that kind of ball. And like Dermot Burns will eat you alive. Declan Hannon is very good in the air. Dan Morris will eat you alive. Sean Finnan at his size 40 hurley will break every ball to the ground. Like Mike Casey, actually, funny enough, speaking of Galway, like, and Mike Casey, for a kind of a relatively shorter man, is probably the best defender at dealing with that height mismatch that I've ever seen. Like, he was left in there with Peter Duggan against Clare. No panic, just made sure he broke his ball. And like, Peter's one of the best in the year because he can go either hand. He was left in there in 2018, and you know, everyone was talking about, oh, they'll have to put Dan Morrissey back to mark Johnny Glynn.
Oh God, like, we were 2 weeks talking about the pain that Johnny Glynn would inflict on Mike
on this small man, and he just destroyed him. Like,
it's
from
not
start
fair.
To finish.
There should be a rule against these sort of height imbalances. It's an outrage.
Dredrick Tatum versus Homer Simpson kind of job. Like, I'm going to make an orphan of Mike Casey's children, but you can forget about it if you can't win your own ball against Limerick. Like Mike Pat said, like, there's a kind of a simple element too, in that, like, you do have to be capable of winning your own ball at times against them. I'll be honest, Murph, this could be famous last words, but like, I don't give Galway a hope in hell of beating Limerick in the semi-final. Like, based on what I saw from that game yesterday, like, realistically, like, you know, while I'm not on board the whole Cork left 3-11 behind them in the first half, they should have won band. Equally, Cork did do enough to win that game. And like, if Galway don't, it's not like, even like, if Galway play anything like that against Limerick, they'll get beaten out the gate. If Galway don't play at least three times as well as they played on Saturday, they'll get beaten out the gate.
But is that in them, is what I'm saying, Jamie? Is do you see any a much higher ceiling than what's there? Or is that just the Galway team at the moment, you know, at the early enough stage of Henry Shefflin's management?
At the moment, I don't think they're capable of beating Limerick, to be quite honest. I look at their forward line and I don't see anyone else who can carry the can in terms of winning his own ball and scoring. Like, there's very much a plan there with Tom Monaghan and Ronan Glennon to do that kind of drop off and Ryan Taylor kind of work, we'll say, like, where they're dropping off and getting on ball and delivering ball. But like, who actually is going to score for them, like, with Conor Whelan? Because like, even Conor Whelan, like, you know, his totals are, like, his best totals are something like 2-3 or maybe, you know, like, he's not going to score 8 points from play for you. Like, that's not his game. Even look at, Jesus Christ, like, two of the scores he took the last day against Cork. Like they can't continue going over, like, from the end line on the sideline. Like, you know, it's not sustainable to think that his scores will carry you through, because he's not even like a heavy scorer, like, in the mold of Tony Kelly or these guys. So like, he needs someone else to carry the scoring can. Conor Cooney probably should be picking up that slack, but seems like,
Cooney and Cathal Mannion are the answer to the question you're asking, in that Cathal Mannion can hit 6 points from play, like, and has done it before. And
but what's his role? What's his role in this Galway team? Because he spends a lot of the time further back to pitch as well. So is he going to carry that scoring can? Probably not. Keenan Fahey, you know, it was probably a bad weekend for the guys who were reprieved of their suspensions, really. When you add up the three lads' days out, they weren't particularly good. But like, Keenan Fahey doesn't look like he's a particular scoring forward. Conor Cooney, in fairness, at least nailed his frees this day, which is what got them over the line when you look back at it, which is his primary job, I suppose, there. But he needs to contribute more from play. A guy I'd love to see is Jason Flynn. I don't know. I think he's that guy who, if they could get him going, could score. Like I'm looking at the forward line and I'm like, what is it about this guy? When I look at him, it seems to be that he has everything, but what is he not doing? Like, because obviously, like, I'd be always very wary of saying, when you're not inside a camp, you don't know what's going on. So, you know, we do know nothing, but what is it that this guy is lacking? Because it seems to me he could and possibly should be the answer to that next scoring forward, but just doesn't seem to be.
Yeah, well, you know, that's 7 or 8 years that goalie people have been saying exactly the same thing about Jason Flynn, you know, and just unfortunately, every time he's gotten the chance, he just hasn't shown it, you know. He's gotten so many chances in this team, and you know you can't take him off a panel because he's so good, and he's got so many attributes. But it's just, you know, he just hasn't delivered on it. You know, unfortunately, that's just the reality of the situation.
Okay, lads, we'll have more time to think about these semi-finals, I'm sure. Pat, just one last word there for you.
It's only just on Galway, yeah. Like, you need a good spread of scorers, Kieran. That's the, like, you know, like Tom Morrissey and Grod Hegarty, everyone's on about their work rate and this or that, but like they're still getting 4 or 5 points in play every game.
Score,
so that's 8 or 9 points between them. So then you have your inside forwards contributing and the midfielders a handful of scorers. But the other teams are struggling in that respect because Conor Whelan will get a few scores, Conor Cooney will get a few scores in the freeze, Cathal Mannion will as well. But you've another 3 forwards and you've 2 midfielders there that need to be contributing 10 or 11 points between them. And at the moment, you know, you're just not going to get up to it. So that's where teams are struggling. Any day to come off and there's only a spread of 4 or 5 scorers against Limerick, they're going to lose. You know, you need 7 or 8 people pitching in with a handful of points, because it's going to be up to 20 plus points and obviously a goal or two to beat them as well. So it's I think they have a chance. Obviously they have a chance in the semi-final, but on a basic level, if you were to put all the panels of the 4 teams left out on paper, you'd be very hard pushed to take any of those Limerick guys off the best 15 that's there. And the reality is they have the best panel of players, they have the best bunch of players at the moment. And you know, when it comes down to it, on a big day in Turris or Croke Park, if everyone is performing at the same level, in theory, the best players win out. And that's why Limerick have the level of performance every day, and the quality they have and the class they have comes to the fore. So it's, you know, I won't say Galway are trying to bring them down a level, but to even it out, they have to make sure that they're taking away the scores. And then the game plan is simple, but again, not easy, because you have to match the quality that's on the field.
On that somber note for Murph, we'll wrap things. Pat, Jamie, lovely. Thanks a mil.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, can Mead go for the goal here? 2:13 to 1:13. This is like old times at the moment.
Hurt them, kill them, injure them.
A row brewing on the 45-metre line. This is deliberately to stop Mead's momentum. Have no doubt about that. When Dublin get vulnerable, they always do this. Always and ever. And always and ever have.
That was our mentality in the 80s.
Hurt them, kill them, injure them.
Some of me footballers are missing now. Killer instinct.
Tough plays denied in the air.
2 or 3 players need to be stopped. Some way, somehow, they need to be stopped.
Hurt them, kill them, injure them.
Killing Dublin, stopping Dublin. There's certain things Mead need to do to stop them, you know?
There's still a chance for Mead, and Dublin at the moment are holding on to it in an obnoxious fashion. This is ugly, ugly football.
The killer instinct.
Your purpose on this planet is to stop Dublin.
Hurt them, kill them, injure them.
Do anything you've got to do. They're just going to be stopped. They're either going to be outplayed or they're going to be removed.
Laid back. Tough face, lad, in the air.
quite the spectacular evening of golf last night. Leona Maguire shooting a final round 65 to make it into a three-way playoff for the major LPGA Classic, only to finally lose out on the second sudden death hole. Rory McIlroy didn't get quite as close to winning the US Open. His final round charge didn't materialise. It was left to Sheffield United fan Matt Fitzpatrick to step up to win the first of his six major titles.
Well, Owen, I have to say that the man from the Steel City showed nerves of steel down the stretch for his maiden major victory.
Yeah. There were a lot of blades. There were a lot of puns on the blades.
Well, I should hope so. Yeah. I mean, I've got a whole bag of them here, Owen.
How do you mean six major victories, Owen?
Thanks, Ken, for picking me up on that. Six is the number, said Fitzpatrick when asked whether he had a majors target. That's the number that we all in Fitzpatrick's team agreed on. I love that. It's got to be six. I've got a bit of a way to go, but it's a good start. That's a, you know, there are a lot of players, and Rory McIlroy being among them, who might have thought that they would get to six long before now, but it's hard to sometimes get past that 3-4 kind of barrier. Yeah. It would match the European record of Nick Faldo were he to end up with six major titles. You were watching last night, Ken.
I threw it on out.
Yeah. Were you impressed by Fitzpatrick's bunker shot on 18?
It was a very fine bunker shot. It was a solid whack. Ball landed very close to the flag after that, and I thought, well, that was a good shot.
You can't ask for much more than that, Ken, can you?
No,
when
but
the ball lands quite close to the hole.
I was puzzled. I was like, who are these people? Have all the best players already joined LIV Golf? I mean, I don't know any of these. And then
name the five best golfers in the world right now, Ken, in your head.
In my head,
Tiger Woods, obviously.
Tiger Woods is the legacy
number one. Yeah,
Rory McIlroy.
Yep.
Phil Mickelson, okay. Bryson DeChambeau, and Charles Schwartzel.
Jesus Christ. That last one.
You really are a big LIV Golf fan, aren't you?
Well, I mean,
like three of those names play on LIV Golf, and the other one is currently recuperating.
Well, I thought is Bryson DeChambeau not a big player?
He is, but I'll tell you what is like. He has had a bit of a bad run of form, you know. He was like 2 years ago a phenomenon in world golf.
Jordan Spieth.
See, Bryson DeChambeau is the world number 29, you know.
Right.
Which is not what you'd call in the top
but
five. Really,
Spieth is big.
No,
or there
Spieth,
was a guy
Spieth
who
is
I saw.
Another one. Spieth is another one of those golfers who he got to three, isn't he on three? And he's been maroon there for an awful long time. But you were going to say, who else did you see?
I saw this guy with a weird accent. What was his name? John Rahm,
yeah.
I saw this guy. But where's that guy from? Is he American?
Spain, Ken.
He's Spanish, right? Okay, I thought he sounded Spanish, but then he was called John Rahm.
Yeah, but he spent a lot of time in the US on the collegiate circuit.
He's the world number two. Jordan Spieth is the world number 10.
Scotty Scheffler is the world number one, and Scotty Scheffler was right in the thick of it there last night.
What about Larry?
Mm-hmm. Well, Shane is currently world number 24.
Okay.
There's a lot of stories going around about Matt Fitzpatrick this morning, just how great a guy he is and all this sort of stuff. One of them from Dan Rappaport. Impossible to overstate how disciplined Matt Fitzpatrick is, but this might help. A few weeks ago, his friend had a bachelor party in Florida. Matt offered his house for them all to stay at and use as they please, but it was the week before the PGA Championship, so he told them he absolutely under no circumstances would participate in any debauchery. He practiced all day, had dinner with them, and stayed in his room while the boys raged all night.
Wow. I did like his brother, Alex. I was most impressed by his dedication to the cause, actually. I know this is Matt's moment, but his brother flying home to England on Saturday morning, landing, and then realising that his brother was tied for the lead in the US Open, got on a flight straight back and landed. Because actually, it was hilarious. He was the family were being interviewed on Sky Sports. Mum, brother and dad from left to right on the screen. And I took one look at this trio. And see, I have a special power, Owen. I don't know if you know this, but I am able to guess with a high degree of certainty whether someone being interviewed in the aftermath of a sporting event is about to curse during the interview. Right? This is finally honed from watching minor games on TG Cahir, where without fail the man of the match will throw in a cuss word. The high point of this actually was at the 2016 All Ireland final. I was watching it with Dion Fanning. And John Bubbles Dwyer was being interviewed on the pitch. And literally, as the camera panned to him, before the interview started, I turned to Dion and I said, he's going to, he's definitely going to swear during this interview. And of course, he started the interview with, we're champions of fucking Ireland to like 82,000 people and a watching audience of 1 million people. But anyway, so I was watching this, and the brother, he looked as if he'd been enjoying the hospitality tents, like, a lot. Mm. Like, he looked extremely...
That's what they're there for, you know? That's what they're
extremely
there for.
Tired and emotional. I was like, this guy is definitely going to swear on national television. And then, like, the first thing he says was, I basically haven't slept for 36 hours and have flown across the Atlantic twice. So I was like, yeah, this is actually isn't beer-related. This is just, like, extreme exhaustion. I know, but the family seemed amazing.
Yeah,
I mean, I did feel like there was rather more talk about the caddy than there needed to be.
There seemed to be a lot of that, yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah, great. Like, he won his first major, but I mean...
So did Matt Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, and like, he did the lion's share. Let's not beat around the bush here. Matt Fitzpatrick did hit, I think, nearly all of the shots that won the US Open yesterday. Maybe, in fact, 100% of them.
Thank you for listening to today's Second Captains podcast. Thanks, Merv. Thanks, Ken. It's good to be back.
Thank you, Owen, and thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Kieran.
Oh, Owen, can I say it?
Yes, Kieran.
He didn't call me Owen until literally the last link on Friday.
Whoa.
It sounded like I was doing it deliberately, but it was just...
that's incredible.
It was genuinely incredible.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. To get that far, to get so close, and to fall
so close to Everest.
There you go. Thanks, fellas. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.
And one last thing, Owen and Murph. I don't say this often enough, but I love you guys and appreciate all the hard work you do. You're the best.
What phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's to persuade the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're concerned about mental health or looking to get into self-improvement, join me at the Piece by Piece podcast. There, I'm interviewing everyday people and experts alike about how to overcome difficulties around mental health. Speaking of which, I just released an interview with a mental health historian and another with two friends who are healthcare workers.
If these conversations interest you, check us out at Piece by Piece. That's Piece with an A, B-I, and then Piece with an I. Thank you so much.